Welcome to the Startup Addict Podcast. I'm Nick Swinburne. I've been starting companies for over 20 years now. I've had some big successes, like Zappos.com, and lots of failures. Regardless of the outcome, I'm still convinced there's nothing more addicting than trying to turn ideas into reality. On this episode, we're going to take a slightly different perspective on startups. We have Brandon Schneider. He's the newly promoted Chief Revenue Officer of the Golden State Warriors. His only job, his first job out of college was with the Warriors, and he's risen through the ranks. Actually been a pretty interesting story, and really got us thinking about things in a different way. A lot of people look at it as you work at a startup or you work at an established company. And what we found during this interview is there's a lot in common, and that you can actually be your own startup within a larger company. So I think there's a lot of good stuff in this episode.
All right. Welcome to episode 5 of the Startup Addict. Today we're joined with Brandon Schneider, the Chief Revenue Officer of the Warriors.
The Golden State Warriors.
The Golden State Warriors.
And the newly promoted Chief Revenue Officer. He's on right now.
Thanks for having me on, Nick.
This is part of your media tour, right?
Yeah, exactly right. This is top 11.
All right. Well, we're excited to have you on here. So generally, on the show, we talk about startups and, you know, turning ideas into reality. And we thought it would be interesting to have another perspective on that whole process. And show that you don't necessarily have to start your own company or be an entrepreneur based on, you know, the usual definitions in order to, you know, have the same success, have a fulfilling career, and be responsible for a big company. So we thought we'd have you on here, and let's figure this out. We want to figure out a... You got to go? You guys, that revenue?
Is that you calling me?
I think that's revenue. That's revenue. You better answer that.
lots of revenue on the other end of the phone.
Unbelievable. Jeez, just cost you so much money. All right, so let's start early on. What did you want to be when you were growing up? Were you going to be an athlete?
No, I had a different dream than you, Nick. No, you know, it's funny you say that. When I was a kid, and people would ask me, what do you want to do when you grow up? One of the answers, for a while it was a lawyer. But then when I figured out that you had to go to law school and read a lot, I realized that probably wasn't a good idea. And then I used to tell people I wanted to be manager of the San Francisco Giants. And so that was like, I'm being serious, like that was kind of the dream job, you know, growing up as a big sports fan. And then as I got older, like I actually didn't realize you could make a career in sports if you weren't, you know, 6'7" and could jump out of the building. So I was really fortunate to get started with the Warriors.
So baseball was your favorite sport?
You know, I always liked baseball, basketball, football. But as a kid, like I started going to 20 Giants games a year starting back in 1986. And so I was always a big fan, and just watching the games, like I could predict, you know, when Felipe Alou or Dusty Baker was a manager and they were going to go to the bullpen or bring up a pinch hitter or whatever, I could always predict the move they were going to make. And so after a while, I was like, and you know, and in some cases I might agree, some cases I didn't. But in my delusional head at 15, 17 years old, you know, I thought, you know what, someday I could be the manager of the
Giants. Perfect for this.
Yeah, nice.
What do you end up studying in school?
So I went to UCLA. I was a business economics major and an accounting minor.
So at what point did you give up on the managing the Giants dream?
You know, it's, I think that was one of those dreams where it was just that, you know, and you know, you look at it and say, look, at some point, if you get some crazy break, maybe it comes to fruition. But I don't know that I ever looked at that as being, you know, a likely path to be on. You know, what I would say as far as getting here is, you know, when I graduated from UCLA, I thought, you know, I thought I'd be like an investment banker or a venture capitalist or something like that, which is what a lot of my friends were looking at that had similar, you know, backgrounds in school. And, you know, I graduated in 2001. So if you think back to that time period, the stock market had just crashed. And so, you know, I was interviewing with Merrill Lynch and Morgan Stanley, Lehman Brothers at the time. And these companies are like, yeah, we'd love to hire you, but we're actually firing people. And that's when I was actually at a Giants game, so tied back to the Giants, with a guy by the name of Jeff Krolik, who at the time was the general manager of Fox Sports Net, who was the RSN partner for the Giants and the Warriors. And we're in a suite at the Giants game, and he knew I had just started kind of looking for jobs, had just graduated, and he offered to put in a word for me, as he put it, with the Giants and the Warriors. 2 months later, I got an interview with Robert Rowell, who was the president of the Warriors at the time. Didn't know what I was interviewing for. Put on one of my dad's suits, and 22 years old, and walked in and met with Bobby, and we had a good conversation, and they offered me a job that day.
Nice. What was the position?
So he asked me if I we talked for probably 45 minutes, and he asked me if I could sell, and I was like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, and we're rapping about the team, and he introduced me to the ticket sales leaders at the time, and ended up giving me a job as a season ticket account executive. So I was making cold calls at the time, trying to get people to get excited about a 30-win basketball team.
Nice. So I was doing cold calls for ticket sales in 1996, and all we had was a stack of index cards. No, like, you know, leads coming in online and all that. What was it like back then?
So very different than it is today. It wasn't index cards. So for us, the first list I got when I started with the Warriors was a list of people that had gone to the, we had a exhibition game at Oracle, USA versus China. And so I was calling people that had gone to that game. But really what we mainly did was we called people that had been to that had bought like single game tickets for a Warriors game to talk to them about season tickets or partial season plans or group tickets. And then we would get like business lists, you know, from different areas of the Bay Area to call companies to see if they were interested in entertaining. But it was almost all calls. I mean, back then email was just like, we would email, but it wasn't what it is today. I remember we had one colleague, I won't tell you his name because he actually still works here, who we used to make fun of because one of the things he'd do, he'd get in every morning and send a bunch of faxes out. Nick, you know what a fax machine is?
I do, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He would fax out a bunch of information, which I don't even know if people use fax machines anymore, but that shows you how far, you know, how long I've been with the Warriors. I've been here 16 plus seasons. I started in 2002.
Dude, the worst was when you had a fax machine and you didn't answer it, and so the fax just kept coming and coming and coming and coming, and there was no way to make it fucking stop. So what was your first impression of the organization when you got in there? So it was your first job, so you didn't really have another work environment to compare it to?
Yeah, I mean, I had worked in restaurants and different things, you know, starting in high school through college, but it was my first, you know, real career type of job. Being a sports fan growing up, having the opportunity to work for the Golden State Warriors was pretty awesome. You know, at the time, I didn't know much, but it was fun. Like, I was like, okay, I get to go to work and talk about basketball all day, and, you know, the more tickets I sell, the more money I make. You know, it was a commission-based job. Base salary was $28,000.
Okay, so you had a salary plus commission.
Salary plus commission.
Fuck, you're making double what I made when I got screwed. What the fuck?
That's what you're making now?
At the Padres, I was at the Stampede, I was making like $15,000.
Yeah. That must have been inflation.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, so, I mean, my first impression was, you know, it was awesome. You know, obviously, the basketball team wasn't great at that point, but I will tell you, every year we were selling the dream, and every year I believed it, and I think we all did, right?
I believed it. I believed what you were selling every year.
Pardon me?
I believed what you were selling every year.
Yeah, exactly. We could talk about that too. There was five or six other people that did what I did, and we really did. I mean, every year there was, you know, we had back when I started, it was Gilbert Arenas was our second round pick. We had Jason Richardson, Troy Murphy. Eric Musselman was the coach my first 2 years here. And every year going into the year, we were, you know, you're excited. We have a good young team. And then by, I don't know, December 5th or so, we realized that, no, we weren't going to make the playoffs this year. You know, so it's a little different than the environment is now.
Although the draft is less exciting now. Back then, around January, you start focusing on the draft and you convince yourself that the savior is on the way.
That's right. I mean, you know, so the draft lottery was a big deal. Right, every year you're hoping they pick your ping pong ball, so you get the number one pick. And you're right, we would do a draft party every year, and that was the big marquee thing, because we weren't going to get free agents based on where our team was, not the premium free agents. And you're right, I mean, the draft was a huge catalyst for us.
So you get a sales job. There's five or six people doing the same job.
Yeah, at that time, I think there were six or seven total.
All came in about the same time, or were some there before? Some came in
after?
No,
when I started, everyone else was there. So the staff was intact, and then I just came in, you know, as kind of an additional person.
Got it. We just lost.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
That was another call coming in.
Oh, really? Nice.
More revenue.
Dude,
you are just
the best. This
it.
Might be your legacy interview because you might not have the job by the time you're done.
No, that call was from. It looked like it was from a Gabby Swinburne.
Oh yeah, nice. Yeah. Yeah. She wants the money back.
I was gonna say. So maybe that was revenue. You never know.
Yeah, you don't know. All right. So you're doing sales. You're just young and hungry. You got a handful of people doing the same job. How long did you stay in that same job for?
I got to think back now. So I was selling tickets for about a year and a half. And you know, I came in, so, you know, because I had the connection to get the interview, I think at the time the Warriors weren't actually looking for a ticket salesperson. Like, there wasn't like a job posting out. And so I sort of came in with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, kind of thinking like, you know, these other people are going to be like, how did this guy get the job? And so that was kind of the thing where it's like, I want to prove myself. So I came in and you know, I was top salesperson, did that for about a year and a half, and then I got promoted to be manager of ticket sales, which basically, I didn't have any power. That basically meant that my job was to run a weekly meeting and hopefully, you know, help others kind of sell as much as I did, was kind of the idea at that point.
So how was that transition from being their peer to being their manager?
It's a good question. You know, we, because it was a smaller team and you're working a lot of hours, you're working games together, we had good camaraderie. You know, so it was smoother than you might think. I mean, I think it worked out well. I think people respected that I worked hard and you know, had done pretty well. Now, once I got the job, you know, I had good intentions. You know, if I think back to how I did things back then, you know, compared to what I've learned over the years, it's actually pretty laughable, you know, because you're probably overzealous in how you're trying to help people. And it's like, look, you can't micromanage, right? You got to let people do their thing. But yeah, the initial transition actually was pretty smooth.
Nice. And at this point, are you thinking like, I want to work here forever? Or are you not thinking past today? Or are you thinking like, are the times when you're like, I could make more money somewhere else, I could advance quicker somewhere else? Or are you just stoked that you're working for the Warriors and doing something fun?
Yeah, I definitely wasn't thinking I'd work here forever. And I think, you know, at the time, because I, you know, by then I'm 24, you know, ish years old, and I was having fun, and I'd had a chance to, you know, to grow pretty quickly. So I think in my head at the time, it was like, let's ride this. Let's see where it goes. You know, and I think my mindset all along was like, look, if I have a chance to continue to learn and grow and I'm having fun, I'm making, you know, a good living, that I was like, we'll stick it out and see where it heads. I don't think if you had asked me back then, would I be with the Warriors, you know, 16 years later? I think if my answer then probably would have been probably not.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people like myself where when they're looking for jobs, they're just looking for jobs. They don't have a clear vision of like, I want to do this, and if I do this, it'll lead to that. Were you more It sounds like you were a little more like analytical and thinking a step ahead. Or were you? Were you thinking like, I'm going to end up here and then I'll advance to here? Or were you just thinking, I'm just going to do whatever, you know, the best I can and see where I end up?
I think one thing that shaped my mindset with all this was my dad growing up was always an entrepreneur and always ran companies. I mean, he ran a company that his father started back in 1976. And so I grew up in that environment, going to meetings with him, management meetings, sales meetings. And so I think he helped me from a mindset perspective. And so, I was working really hard and trying to do what's right for the company. Like, one of the bits of advice, you know, I have a lot of people within the sports industry that call, or, you know, nowadays it's reach out through LinkedIn, that want to know, how do you get into sports and how do you grow your career? And one of the things I talk about is like, look, everyone wants to grow their career and make more money, right? That's a given. But where you can differentiate yourself is, how do you do that, right? If you're selfish and you're just looking out for yourself, like, I don't know if that's valuable. My strategy or mindset was always like, let's do what's best for the company, and do the right thing, be a team player. And maybe this is almost naive to a certain extent, but if you do the right thing and do what's right for the organization, in the long run, that'll benefit you. And that was always the mindset I took. And working for the Warriors, I think it's different too, because you know, it's such a public facing company. You know, if you work for, you know, XYZ insurance company or, you know, bio, you know, pharmaceutical company, whatever, which are great professions, obviously, but it's not, you're not in the public eye as much. And so I think, you know, having that interaction with fans and understanding like what the Warriors and sports can mean to people from an entertainment perspective and just like a release from life, I think, you know, kind of shapes things too, because you feel like, you know, you feel like you're, even though at the time I'm selling tickets and managing the team, but you're there's like a bigger calling to it. You know, one example, it's kind of funny, but, you know, the Warriors had an 18-year span where we missed the playoffs 17 out of 18 years. We're in a league where 16 out of 30 teams make it, so that's actually hard to do. You know, so the 1 year we made it, 2007, I think you might remember this, Nick, the We Believe team. Yep. Was unbelievable. I still remember to this day, so this is 11 years ago, after it must have been our first playoff game or second playoff game at home, I had fans calling me that I had helped, you know, somehow finagle into getting season tickets when the team wasn't good, calling me after games, leaving me messages, or just calling to say, thank you, Brandon. Like, if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have gotten these tickets, and, like, I wouldn't have had the experience that we just had. Like, you know, we've been through a lot of, you know, a lot of losing seasons, but it's all worth it because that was incredible. You know, and so yeah. That's just one example that sticks out in my head. But, you know, you have things like that happen, and it makes you – I don't know, it just sort of elevates what you're doing above what it might otherwise be.
Yeah, I remember that series. I remember, for some reason, when you started talking, all I remembered was leaving – I don't remember what game it was – and Fred Millar, got out of the car in the parking lot because it was like a huge line waiting to get out. He didn't give us any warning. He just opened the car door, got out, and just started running – down the endless line of cars, banging on everyone's windows, getting high fives. And we're like, what the fuck? Then he just came sprinting back in like that was totally normal, like 3 minutes later. It was funny. That was insane. Okay, so.
You sure that was Millar, not you?
I was driving, so it might have been me. All right, so I maybe just keep going back to the same point, but like I worked for the Padres, right? And I always look back on it that for some reason I decided in my head that there was no opportunity for me there. I said, you know, this is sports. The allure of like getting these tickets has worn off. These departments are pretty shallow. No one's leaving. There's no opportunity for me, right? I had one interview in the PR department. I thought that was my opportunity to break out of the sales department where there's a bunch of people and get myself into one of these little small departments where as long as I didn't fuck up, I'd be there a long time. But I didn't get it. So I think it'd be an interesting thing because so many people go into jobs and then they leave those jobs or they stay in those jobs, but it doesn't lead to the kind of success you've had. And so I'm curious, you know, if there's a perspective you think somehow like they could, or lessons you've learned, like watching other people come in who could reach the same heights, but they're either not that into it or they are too pushy. Like, you know, what are lessons you've learned just from watching other people? Like, why did you end up advancing throughout the organization and some other people that maybe were just as good sales guys or, you know, just as personable, but were missing something? Like what were they missing?
Yeah. So I think there's a, you said a lot there. So I think there's a few things that you can point to. I think that the first thing is, you have to like what you're doing. So like in your example, Nick, if you didn't like selling tickets and you're like, well, I'm just doing this to get to the next job. If that's your mindset coming in, I can tell you right now, it's not going to work. You know, so Jerry West, who was one of our executive board members for several years, the first time I met him, I think he ripped this off from somebody else, by the way. But what he said is, if you find something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And I quote that all the time. So I credit him. I should probably figure out who actually said that. But I think that's right on because, like, that was my mindset. Like, I came in and I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I loved it. Like, I was like, okay. I get to make calls and talk to people all day and talk about Warriors basketball. Like, and I get paid. That's my job. This is pretty good.
So you liked it right away.
I liked it right away. So you have to have that mindset. So you have to like what you're doing or you're not going to be good at it. So that's the first thing. And you can't come in just saying, oh, this is just my bridge to get to something else. Because if you have that mindset, you're not actually committed to what you're doing and you're not going to be good at it. So that's the first thing. But to me, that's kind of fundamental. And then the next thing is you can't, because we experience this at the Warriors. Like people are like, oh, you're not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. She's not going anywhere. There's never going to be another job, which it can feel that way at times. But my thing is, like, if you wait until the next opportunity is available to start, like, working hard and showing that you deserve it, it's too late. So what you have to do is you gotta come in with that mindset, like, I'm gonna do everything I can do the right thing. And again, like, sort of trust, you know, trust the process, to quote the Sixers, right? Like, and just understand that when the time's right, something will happen. So, and there's different ways that can happen. Like, someone can leave and then an opportunity opens up. But what I tell people is, like, look, if you're that good, like, we don't wanna lose good people. And so, you know, we understand and you communicate, like, what your aspirations are, you wanna get into management, or you wanna, you know, instead of selling tickets, you wanna sell corporate partnerships or whatever that might be. If we understand what that is and we talk about the path to get there and you do what you're supposed to do, we'll help you get there. Because that's important. Like, we don't wanna lose good people. We understand, like, people after a certain point do wanna get there. I'll give you an example of that. So this was probably 2 or 3 years ago, and Rick Welts, who's our president, who sits next door to me, office next door, comes by and he says, hey, the president of our G League team is gonna be leaving. And, you know, this is not public yet, but what are your thoughts? Like, do you have anyone on your team that you think might be a good fit? We think, you know, bringing someone young, up and coming, you know, up young in the business, to clarify, could be a good fit. Have you thought of anybody? And, you know, I right away was like, Chris Murphy's the guy. And he's like, well, just think about it. I was like, well, I'll think about it. But, you know, Murphy is always trying to do the right thing. Murphy was our senior director of group sales, Chris Murphy. And so we ended up going through the process and he ended up getting the job. So Chris Murphy's the president of the Santa Cruz Warriors. And the reason I use him as an example, because he had a boss and then that boss reported to me, and he could have sat there and said, okay, you guys have both been here for a long time. You're probably not going anywhere. I've been doing this job for 4 or 5 years. He knew what he was doing. He was very good at it. There's nowhere to go. And that could have reflected in his work. But he took the opposite approach. There's no way he ever could have imagined that this opportunity would have come up. And so the opportunity came up. He got the job. And then take it a step further, his right-hand person, his kind of number two, was a woman named Maria Valdueza, who could have taken the same tact, right? And by the way, when Chris Murphy left, we were a really good basketball team. So we could have promoted someone from within. We very easily could have gone to another team or another industry to get someone to come do this job, right? It was an attractive position. And if she had taken the tack that I outlined a minute ago and kind of said, oh, there's nowhere for me to go, we probably would have gone outside. But she was doing the right thing. And so she put herself in a position. She never could have known Chris was going to leave or move to another job. But she had put herself in a position to get that opportunity. So that's really the advice I give people, is like, you don't know what could happen or what couldn't happen, and you never know when it's going to happen. So you got to put yourself in that, you know, in that situation. So when something comes up, it there's no question that it's you. And then the only other thing I would say, and that's probably the biggest key. The only other kind of aside is, you know, what we see this day and age is a lot of people come in, and you know, they're here for a year, and they think that, you know, they're due for the next job, right? And in some cases that may happen, but I think it's patience. You got to come in and you know, learn the business and get really good at your craft, you know, and be patient with opportunities. And the other thing, as far as being a team player, I tell people too, you almost need to do the next job before you get the job title, right? So it's being proactive, and not like, it's just rare that someone's going to say, hey, Nick, you're doing a really good job, I like you, we're going to give you a promotion, right? You're doing everything that's asked of you, so you get a promotion. Well, doing everything that's asked of you is good. You're doing your job. But, you know, are you proactive in finding ways to add more value, coming up with ideas, finding ways that you can help, you know, the overall organization? If you're proactive in doing that, I think that puts you in position too, because you're showing you can do the job, you know, before you have the job.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, so you've been there through two ownership groups, right? And so there's, and obviously you, I'm sure, close to people from the first group, but the consensus was, as an organization, the Warriors weren't as optimized as they are since Joe Lacob took over. I guess there's two questions. One, what did you learn about culture, like, and a work environment from watching the transition from one to the next? And then two, which I'm stealing Julio's question, which is, like, you were doing well, but when the new ownership group comes in, obviously, even personally, you've got to think, like, uh-oh, are they going to bring their own guys in? Are they going to hire from the outside? Like, I'm on this trajectory, and now everything's changed. what was that like?
So I'm going to answer your second question first. So when that happened, by the way, funny aside story, I had a vacation planned with my girlfriend at the time. We were supposed to be going to Mexico, all booked. We were supposed to leave, and literally it was probably 6 days before we were supposed to leave when the news broke that Joe and Peter were buying the team. So, you know, I was like, well, probably shouldn't leave right now. So so I had to cancel a vacation, which my girlfriend, who's now my wife, by the way, was not super impressed with that.
Do you still owe her a vacation, or did you reschedule it?
I hope she's not listening to this.
No, yeah,
I probably do still owe her a vacation.
I won't mention it.
Yeah, exactly. But when Joe and Peter bought the team, you know, it's a good question because I got that question every other day, right? People in the industry would call me and go, like, how are things over there? And especially when they did start making changes, right? That exacerbated the questions. And my answer was always actually pretty simple. I said, you know what? If they decide to go in a different direction and I don't have a job anymore, I'm going to buy season tickets. I'll go get another job. And in my mind, they would have made a big mistake. And that's what I told people, because I said, look, I knew, and I don't know if that sounds arrogant or whatever, but it wasn't anything more than like, look, I know that I work hard and do everything I can for the company, you know, and I had gotten to know them, you know, through the process enough to know that, you know, they weren't just going to fire everybody. Like, they wanted to come in and assess what we had. And so I wasn't worried because I trusted and had built rapport and understood what the direction was going to be. But again, like, if they had decided to make changes, I was comfortable. I was at peace with it. And I didn't think it would happen, but, you know, and what I told people was really what I believed. Like, I literally will buy season tickets because I do want to go to games.
Yeah.
And I'll go get another job. But I'm glad it didn't go that way. So the first question you asked me was about culture. And, you know, that one we could talk, you know, for the next half hour about. But, you know, the culture that Joe and Peter brought in was totally different. And I think... You know, I guess the story that sort of was a turning point in my head, you know, this was their first full season. So they bought the team November 12th of 2010. The season had already started, so they kind of used that first season to assess things. There was not a lot of personnel changes or changes in general until after that season. And then if you remember, the 2011-12 was the lockout shortened season. We played 66 games that year. 23-43, by the way, was our record. So not first year wasn't good. They hadn't had a chance to bring in players, right? The following year, we made the playoffs and beat Denver in the first round. But in 11-12, lockout year, so our schedule came out, and we knew that it was very unlikely we were going to play that schedule. But we wanted to still be able to move the needle, right? So we had the Lakers on opening night, which was at that time was our biggest draw every year. And so when we wanted to put together partial season mini plans to sell. And so what we came up with is buy 10 games, get opening night for free. And the idea was like, look, that sounds like a great headline. We can do the pricing in such a way where, you know, the revenue makes sense. But from a marketing standpoint, you know, that's attractive for people. I'm going to get the biggest game of the year for free. And again, we knew that we probably weren't going to play that schedule. So the reality is we were going to have to, you know, adjust the plans once we figured out when the season was actually going to start. But in the meantime, we wanted to have a product that was attractive. And we thought we needed that because who's going to buy tickets during a lockout? So we had a meeting. It ended up being like a 2.5-hour meeting where we're presenting this, and they just weren't having it, right? And this is Joe and Peter, a guy by the name of Marty Glick, who was kind of our CFO. He was our CFO at the time, and he's one of our owners as well, still really involved. And it was like back and forth, and I was like very... you know, I was really defending, you know, the opinion, like saying, this is really, I'm telling you, this is the right way to do this. And they're going, well, we're going to be better. We're going to have, you know, it's a new day. It's a new culture. You know, we want to have a higher end product. We don't want to be giving away opening night. That's not right for our brand. And I remember one of the things I said was like, look, I hear that every year. And at that point I'd been there, you know, 9 or 10 years. I've heard that every season, except for one, 2 months into the season, we're discounting tickets. Like, you know, I'm telling you, this makes sense. And that was when they were like, look, we're not doing that. Like, that's not what we're doing for our brand. And that was like walking out of that meeting is when I realized, like, you know what, this is a different deal. Like, we have a different organization. We're going to do things the right way. We're building for the long term. So that was the one thing that sort of summed it up, where it was like an aha moment that this was really changing. And what I used to tell people, because my job title was the same before the transition to after, so for a couple of years, and I told people, I said, look, I have the same job title, but my job's totally different, because as an organization, we have a totally different mindset. We're trying to win. We're trying to be the best in every area. Like, that was how I viewed Joe Peter, the organization. They looked at every area of the organization and said, we're going to be the best in the NBA, the best in sports at everything we do. And that's really the lens we look at things. We look at what other teams do. We look at what other companies outside the industry do. And we want to be innovative, and we want to be the best at every single thing that we do. And that was, you know, that was refreshing and a big change from what we were used to.
Okay, cool. So now you've gone from starting, doing sales. You've gone through an ownership change. You've proven yourself to two sets of management, and you keep climbing the ranks. Are you at any point thinking, like, you have any entrepreneurial thoughts? Like, is your dad saying, hey, Brandon, like, I ran my father's business, I want you to come work on something, or do you ever think about those things?
Yeah, there's been times where I thought about it, and I've invested in certain startups, so maybe I've scratched the itch that way, where you have that, both within sports and outside of sports, where you have that involvement and you're helping management to an extent, and you have some skin in the game. So I think I've scratched the itch that way. So I thought about it, but I think by that point I was pretty invested, and once Joe and Peter got here and I started to see kind of where we were headed, the team started to get good, which, you know, changed the dynamic a little bit. You know, we it's funny, like, you're doing all the same things to try and drive the business, and all of a sudden when the team's good, all of a sudden you look smart, because everything you do now actually works and produces really, really big results. So the team started getting good, and then I realized too that, like, you know, we're going to make the team good and we want to be a championship team, but that's not really the end of our aspirations as an organization. So now we're going to build a new arena, right? And then we're gonna get an esports team. And actually, we have two esports teams. And who knows what's next? We have an arm called GSW Ventures where we're looking at other investments. So I think once Joe and Peter got here and I started to kind of understand and get to know them and understand what they were all about and what the Golden State Warriors, I should give you air quotes, what that's going to become, more than just a basketball team. I think I've become even more invested through that process, you know, and that's happening alongside, you know, as you said, getting additional responsibility to where I now oversee, you know, other groups of the organization where I'm able to continue to learn. I said, you know, earlier in the discussion, I felt as long as I was continuing to learn and have a chance to grow and have more of an impact on the success of the organization, that this continues to be an exciting, exciting place where it's like, you know, I do want to be here.
What's the biggest mistake you've made? What's the point where you're like, oh shit, I might have just messed this up. They've lost faith in me, or I've made a mistake I can't come back from, or are there no mistakes?
Mistake free, perfect.
Well, I'm trying to think. The last mistake was 1996, so that was before I started with the. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like,
you know, you make mistakes all the time, right? I mean, I think, you know, one of the things Peter Guber always talks about, he goes, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't want to misquote Peter, but he talks about if you're not failing, you're not trying. And what he really means by that is he wants us to be innovative and try new things and be the first to do this and think outside the box. Well, I think by definition, if that's how you do things, if that's how you're thinking and you're trying to be a trailblazer, you're not always going to be right. Like, you're going to do things that don't work. So I think having that culture, and we live by that, right? I mean, Golden State Warriors have been a basketball team since 1947, but there's a lot of parts of us that are like a startup, actually. Smaller organization. We have 200 and just over 200 employees. And are taking risks. There's not a lot of red tape when you're trying to make decisions. As far as like one specific mistake, I mean, there's been so many, I can't pick one, no. But what I would say is, like, you know, we try not to take the biggest risks on things that could really, you know, screw up the business, in your words. So there's been a lot of things. Like, you know, you look at dynamic ticket pricing as an example. Like, you know, we have a group that's making decisions day to day on, you know, where to price tickets. You're looking at the secondary market. But we make mistakes with that all the time. Like, sometimes you might price a ticket too high and it may not sell. And there could be other times, when you price tickets too low and they're flying off the shelf, and then guys like you, Nick, are buying them for $100 and selling them for $200. You know, then we go, oh shoot, we probably could have charged a little bit more instead of helping Nick make more money. But I don't. There's not any one. Shoot, if there was one too big of a deal, I might be co-hosting this podcast with you.
No, it's interesting because I'm fascinated by it. So there's two parts. One is, It's just such a, you know, everyone has their own experience, right? So I'm just sitting there and I go, I thought my experience, well, you realize later on that my experience is my experience, your experience is your experience. Everyone's different. But I'm always like, how could I be in a situation where I thought there was no opportunity? And then just from knowing you and watching you over the years going, but he was in the same situation and he saw so much opportunity. And then I always thought about, like, you know, people always think of it as, I want to start a company. I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be a founder. I want to work in a startup. And this is a big company that's been around for 75 years or something.
47. So about 1947.
Yeah, our math skills. That's why we're doing the podcast. We got no math skills.
71 years, Nick.
Yeah, see, close. At least me and Julio tried. Dennis didn't even fucking. Dennis got to 21 and then he ran out of fingers.
21.
No, but it's interesting because I think from talking to you, I realized that you don't really think of it as like, I'm in this place working, and I'm, you know, a lot of times I talk to my friends that work in bigger companies, and I always get the impression that they're like, it's just where I go and work, but there's not like that pride or ownership. Whereas from you, it comes across that you're like, it's no different than running a startup or being an entrepreneur. Like, you're in control of your own destiny. You have your own goals and thoughts, and you've created enough confidence around you that you get the opportunity to try things and you know, fail. And the interesting thing, the other thought I had was, fuck, if you work in a big company, it's true. As long as you can explain to everyone why you took the risk, if you fail, it's okay. And within the whole context of the big company, it can absorb it. Whereas, it made me think, maybe on some of these, you know, we're used to failing. We're okay with failing. But maybe failure is not like as absolute, right? You know, we just think of it like, okay, we're working on a small project. We're just getting started. This didn't work. And maybe if you looked at it like, what would a big company do? Well, a big company would say, well, that didn't work. Let's just tweak it slightly, as opposed to being like, oh, that didn't work. Let's go on to the next thing. So it's interesting. I've never met someone who got promoted so many friggin' times. So that's why I called you up. I was like asking Rick the other day. I was like, "What does this guy? What happens inside the office? Does this guy just storm into the office once a quarter and say, listen, I'm fucking out of here unless I get another promotion? Or are you guys just sitting here going, Brandon, here's another promotion. Here's another promotion." I mean, it's got to be, it's like a quarterly thing. There's only, you know, and I mean, there's not many spots left.
What did he say to that? I hope he didn't tell you the truth.
He said no. He's been great. He's, you know, he deserves it. He's, you know, blah 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 blah. He wouldn't really buy it. I was trying to get some, you know, something that I could bring back to you, and say, dude, I heard you're just holding him hostage, and this is all ridiculous. But no,
you know what I think it is. I tell people, you know, over the years they promoted me enough times because they figured that would keep me happy, so they could promote me instead of having to pay me more money. I think sometimes that's how it works.
That's true. The other thing which is fascinating to me is, like, when we talk sometimes on the phone, you're just talking about how you work until, you know, you're working on these things until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. You get up early and you go back to work, and it's so foreign to me because I'm like, I wish I could focus on, I mean, it's not one thing you're working on, but on one general project all that time. It's like, we've talked, I think, a couple times before. It's so hard to find that one thing where you're like, you know, it's your job, and you wake up thinking about it. You don't go to sleep because you're still working on it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and Nick, I mean, as I'm listening to you talk, I mean, think back to what I said from Jerry West. Find something you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. And that's really what it is, because, I mean, so I not only love what I do, but the people that I work with. So I go to work. I'm at work a lot. I've missed 17 Warriors home games in the last 16 years. And most people look at that and go, you get to go to the game, which is true. I'm working at the game, but I get to be at the game every night. I like the people I work with. We have a good group, and you love what you're doing. So I'm involved. Like, the Warriors have won two of the last three championships, you know, and I get a ring, and I get to, like, I feel like I have some small hand in helping the Warriors do that, you know. And then you go to the parade and there's a million people there, and you kind of look out, you're sitting on stage, right, and you're listening to Joe Lacob and, you know, Stephen Curry, Peter Gruber, Rick Welts, Bob Myers, all these people talk, and you're like, wow, like, we're a part of, look at what this does for, you know, the city of Oakland, the entire Bay Area. The joy that we bring, and what I do every day is, like, you know, a small piece in helping that happen. So I think, you know, as you sort of take a step back, it's like, you know, I get to work in sports. I love sports. You know, there's so many people out there that would love the opportunity to work for a sports team, and I get to do it every day. So I think, you know, I think that's the mindset. And so as you're, you know, like you're asking earlier, like, how do you, you know, as opposed to doing a startup or as opposed to, you know, going to do another job, you know, I think that's what it comes down to. If you can find something you really like doing and believe in, you're also going to be good at it, and then it becomes not work.
Yeah, well, that was the one part I wasn't expecting. I wasn't expecting that you'd have the passion for sales. I thought you'd be, like, ambitious and you'd want to keep advancing. But I guess that was the difference, right? Like, I can't help it. I'm just going to think about the idea and the starting part of things. I'm not as interested in the beyond part. And it's the same thing. You're just interested in the sales and, you know, growing and all those kind of things. So it's interesting. Now, if you feel partially responsible when they win, does this mean when you lose and you frustrate the fans that you're partially responsible for that loss and frustration as well?
Yeah, I mean, the answer has to be yes, right? we certainly hear from the fans, so it certainly certainly affects the business and certainly affects, you know, our teams and how we do it. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I do. I mean, I think the organization, I think all of us, you know, the 200 and something of us are, you know, I don't want to say live and die with the results of the team, because, you know, we don't directly affect what's happening on the court. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we have highs and lows tied to that. We try not to, by the way. You tried to kind of ride the highs and not fall with the lows. But yeah, I mean, there's things that kind of go up and down based on how the team's playing, for sure. I mean, look, when I go home after a game, you know, you feel differently after a win than a loss, for sure. Even though I'm not making it quite as many threes as the Splash Brothers, but it still affects your mindset, for sure.
Yeah. Now, I know you got to go because you got to get some, got to make up for the lost revenue from those three calls. I think you got a couple of texts in there too, so you're probably way behind. But I got, so
there's a bill in your inbox actually that covers that, so I think we're okay.
Nice. So I do think I think this has been interesting. I think it's a different perspective on what a startup is, and I think, like, a startup is just an idea that grows in the world. And I think it's interesting to look at someone's career as
a startup,
mm-hmm. and it grew within an organization. And it really goes through all the same challenges, the same ups and downs, the same opportunities there, too. So that was
the thing I found interesting, and maybe I'm, but we talked about it, I think, in episode 4, where it's, if you go to it thinking that it's an ends to a mean, means to an end, I'm sorry, then it's almost doomed to fail, as opposed to seeing sort of the being addicted to this idea of growth
that
you were, as opposed to thinking about the bottom line, which would be your bank account, how much you're making, what your position is within an organization or within a startup or whatever. But if you look at it as you loving what you do, as in you starting companies and brand and growing within the Warriors, then the opportunities and the possibilities are endless, really.
Yeah, it all just seems to come back to passion. As long as you're passionate about what you do, as long as you can't help it, because we always say you can't control what you think about. So the same way we can't wake up thinking about different things, Brandon wakes up thinking about similar things. Now, on a more serious note, how many push-ups can you do? Because the whole time I've known you, you've been telling me you just crank out 200 push-ups every morning, and I still don't understand this. It's got to be some weird, like, freak of nature thing. Like, Can we see the arms? Can you pick them up in the picture here? Is this
you want me to flex for you?
Sums out.
Is it still possible? Can you still do this?
You know what we should do? You know what we'll do? We'll the next time I see you, I'll go over to your gym and we'll just do a push-up contest.
Nice.
Oh, and then you can judge for yourself.
All right. Well, we're pretty strict. We're not gonna allow just kind of, like, you know, shaking the elbows and counting that as a push-up.
Yeah, I think that may that fact may actually hurt you, but yeah, I agree.
Knees on the ground, right? That's the rule.
Okay, yeah, knees on the ground. That's Dennis's rule. All right, cool. Well, thanks for coming on. Anything you want to add? Any parting wisdom?
Any plugs?
Anything you want to plug? Anywhere you want to go on that vacation you owe your wife?
Yeah, No, I think at the end of the day, I really appreciate the time. This was a lot of fun, and I think the comparisons you're drawing are right on. I mean, I think what you said at the end, it really does all come down to passion. You know, if you find something that you love to do, you know, you're going to be successful at it. You're going to enjoy it. And you know, the other thing I'll give you, enjoy the process. The other thing we didn't get through, Peter Guber talks about this. I keep quoting Peter, but he's got so many good things. And he said this to me. We were at Morton Steakhouse after we won the championship in Cleveland in 2015. And he said, you know, it's fun that we won. And this is fun celebrating that we won a championship. But he's like, you know, what's more fun for me is the journey. You know, he's won Academy Awards, and he talks about if it's all about and the winner is, you know, that 30 seconds, it can't be just about that. It's got to be about everything that led up to that. So I think that's important here, too, is you enjoy the whole process and not just the end result. So I think that's a, you know, that's an important part of this whole startup kind of mentality.
And it's fitting for the Warriors because losing for so long made winning so much sweeter, right? It was like the impossible has happened.
that's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, I think not having had one in 40 years made it that much sweeter, and it continues to make it sweeter because it's like, you know, hopefully let's ride this thing out, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
let's do it. I don't know who Dennis is rooting for, but I know me and Julio are rooting for the Warriors. All right, cool. Well, thanks for coming on. And
yes, thank you.
We'll play this over at the Jumbotron at the arena for the next game.
Yeah. Perfect. You're trying to put people to sleep before the game, huh?
That was the one thing Rick asked for. He just said, can I get a copy for our staff meeting? I said, no problem.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Yeah, it's all right. He gave me a heads up. I was waiting for that. Thanks, right. Nick. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Brandon.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
All right. See ya.
See ya.